I haven't seen gender numbers, like gender differences in terms of PTSD. I have read also that women are more likely to be diagnosed with symptoms of depression and or anxiety, but that their outcomes from those are actually better than men.
Greetings, it's March, and in the continuing spirit of bringing stories to Women's History Month, today we're going to talk about mental health among female firefighters. We're sitting down again with former firefighter turned clinical psychologist, Dr. Beth Murphy, and physician Dr. Marcy Hamrick from Station 2 Clinic in Belltown. Let's get started. I want to jump right in. I'm really excited about this episode. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and this is Listen Up L27. So, ladies, welcome back. Last time we talked more about the physical issues that affect women, and today we're going to begin to address some of the mental health issues that are specific to women in the fire service. Before we do, I also wanted to mention, if you don't know already, that Dr. Murphy is a contributor to a report that was published in 2019 by the U.S. Fire Administration titled Emerging Health and Safety Issues Among Women in the Fire Service. For our listeners, we're going to put a link to the study on the episode's page. But first, I'd like to start with Dr. Murphy and say, how did you get involved with this report?
I know people.
That's always how it starts.
Yes. I actually was not so much involved, but I joined the Women in Fire. I think at the time it was the International Women in the Fire Service. I don't remember. They've gone through like a couple name changes. So I think they're Women in Fire now. But I became a member when I was actually working as a firefighter. And interestingly, I never got involved beyond that. Like I paid some dues and I would go on their site and read some stuff, but never really sought them out. Then when I was working on my dissertation, I started contacting them because they helped me connect with some women across the country for my research. So I traveled across the country to do my research. So I have interviews with women from all over. And then I started meeting them more and more when I was going and speaking at FDIC in Indianapolis, which is like a place where it's like 35,000 firefighters all there to learn and absolutely no partying. not. Sorry, I had to throw that in there. But yeah, so and then it's just like I got to talk with them. We became really good friends with the latest president, the president before that, and the president before that. And so they knew me, they knew what I did and what I talked about. And they said, hey, we'd like you to be part of this. So
that's great. You know, it's really cool that we're going to have that available for people because there's a lot of really interesting pieces and it's broken mm-hmm. down really well by the different subject matter and topics within the report.
Oh, yeah. I think the one recruitment and retention, the author of that is Candace McDonald. And she is amazing. She talks about that stuff. She travels all over and she actually used to work for NASA. But yeah, that topic is great. And she touches a lot on the psychological stuff too.
That's great. And I think, you know, we all know that firefighting is stressful, you know, not just physically, like we talked about before, but emotionally. And now, you know, you add on a layer of a male-centric culture on top of that. And we're not male bashing here, but we know it's a very male-oriented culture. When you first became a firefighter, I mean, you must have hit some of these, some issues along the way as well.
Yeah, I definitely did. I think, and this is something that I use this experience when I talk to some of the firefighters that come in and talk to me now. I learned about, like, I didn't grow up in a fire service family, so I didn't have any experience with it. But when I had small children and I went through a divorce. So I'm like a single mom with three small children. I'm trying to find a job that pays enough to have money left over after I paid the babysitter. That was hard to come by. I didn't know what to do. And then my husband, who wasn't my husband at that time, he worked out at the gym where I worked out at. So I was super fit. And So that was one thing I'm like going, you know, the ideal job would be that I could do something that will motivate me to keep working out. And that, you know, being fit would be an asset, that I would make enough money to take care of my kids. So at the gym, I heard my husband, John, talking to other women in there about, you know, getting ready to take tests for the fire service. At that time, I thought, there's no way I can do it. I can't live 24 hours at the fire station. Like, I had no idea about the shifts. I started to ask questions. And so he answered my questions, but then he told me stories. He told me his stories, his experience of being in the fire service. But he had these really great stories of camaraderie, you know, and then they called it the brotherhood. And, you know, they lived in the community where they worked, and they did trips together, and, you know, like, wives got together and the kids grew up together. And it was like, I'm like, this sounds amazing. I'm like, this is for me. I can do this. And I thought, it's 24-hour shifts, but I'll have more waking time with my kids. And I'll make money that I can support them. So I tested, and I wanted to work for Bellevue. So I tested in a lot of places, but I ended up testing twice, and I got hired the second time. I started. Recruit Academy was, you know, pretty much what I expected, and that went well. You know, my first year, you know, your first year, you're probation, so you kind of keep your head down and do what you're told to do and play the game, whatever that is, you know. So I'm like 33 years old, and I'm a mom, and I'm having to, you know, basically do what I would expect like an 18-year-old to have to go through. But it was fine. It was kind of like slow after that, like some changes. And it started to become clear that the fire service wasn't what I had been told about. So I call that the myth of the fire service. That's how I refer to it in my research. So it's like there's this story. And it's interesting because, I mean, for me, it was really different because I was a woman. I thought that I was going to be brought in and I was going to be treated well, be one of the guys, so to speak. I mean, I grew up with brothers, so I thought, perfect. This is perfect. But I never got invited to do anything. I could play, like, I was a good, really good softball player. Like, I was invited to play on a women's semi-pro team that was traveling the country. But they didn't want me on their team because it was only men.
Because you'd beat them.
Yes. That was actually a driving factor for me when I was younger. It's like, can I lift more than the guys? I did a 6 months on the truck company, and we did this challenge. It was a push-up challenge, and so we were in a circle. And so one guy would do one push-up, the next person would do two push-ups, and the next person would do three push-ups. And I was the second to last person. So, and I think I probably could have done a few more, but I was just like, yeah, I'm kind of tired. I'm going to quit now. So, I mean, I had moments of fun, but like the camaraderie that my husband talked about, that cohesion, I didn't really experience that. And there were enough things that went on that kind of made me feel like I wasn't a part of it. There was a, you know, like a harassment discrimination thing that I went through. And that made me almost quit. And really that was like that was what made me go, I got to find out if other women experienced this, because I didn't think they did. Because the other women in my department, it didn't look like they were struggling like I was. And that really told me now that I know their stories too, that you can't tell what's going on with somebody inside just by looking at how they are outside. Everybody finds a way to cope. But I almost quit because I was like, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. There's like, I just felt so disconnected and so disillusioned. And it wasn't what I expected. And I think that that's another thing. This is what I use when I talk to firefighters now, is that we have these expectations for me, the expectation was based on the stories that my husband had told, and maybe some of them were exaggerated. But then there's the reality. And the bigger that gap, the more tension you feel. And that tension can, you know, come across as like anxiety or depression or you know, something like that. And then we try and do something with it. And we're usually like, oh, what can I do to control this? You know, so we take responsibility for it. And it's like, it's not really your responsibility. I mean, your attitude about it is your responsibility, but it's like, you can't change what it is, which is kind of a thing that is more hindsight. Like at that time, I didn't really know. I didn't really know what to do with it. I just knew that this was a job that I actually liked to do the job. I really liked the money. And I liked the hours. And so I had to shift my attitude. I had to shift to be more in tune with the reality of the situation. And I won't go so far as to say like it was just a job. But it did become more of a job. It was more about, I'm going to go to work. And I'm going to do my job. And I'm going to do the best I can. And then I'm going to go home and I'm going to be with my kids and my family. Most often men, but women can do this too. It's like the only life they have is the fire service. And if that's what they have and they go through this, like, oh my gosh, the fire service has changed, but my attitude is still about what it was, or that, you know, their expectation is whatever it is, then they start to get really unhappy. And that actually is a lot of what I'm seeing. A lot of guys are like, this is, it's not what it was like when I first came in. And I have heard a lot from women, but women are more likely to come in and they expect it to be hard, physically and mentally. And so in some ways, they're a little bit more prepared. but it does take a toll because it takes energy to be on guard all the time.
Yeah. And, it's also interesting, you know, when we see female firefighters out there, it's very inspiring. I mean, it's very, very mm-hmm. inspiring to see women on the trucks doing this job. It's a hard job. And we see them, you know, as these badass role models. And especially like for little girls, you can be whatever you want to be. And you have this reality that you're talking about. This can cause all kinds of other psychological stresses and things like that as we go deeper. But I mean, for everybody as well, mm-hmm. it's not just women. When we talk about some of these pieces, I wonder how things like PTSD and PTSS and anxiety affect women in the fire service, maybe more. Can you talk a little bit about that?
They do have a higher incidence of depression, and that I think also anxiety.
I haven't seen gender numbers, like gender differences in terms of PTSD. I have read also that women are more likely to be diagnosed with symptoms of depression and or anxiety, but that their outcomes from those are actually better than men. Again, not to diss men at all, but that they have resilience. So despite the fact that they are diagnosed with these things, they are doing well despite those things. They are moving through those things.
And I think we've talked about this in terms of women having like a better medical support team around them. I think maybe that's part of, you know, why the resilience can be there a little bit. So what do you think?
Yeah, I was just wondering, and maybe Beth knows this, I feel like the women that I see are perhaps less identified as a firefighter. They have other things in their lives that are really important to them, whether it be families or hobbies. And I wonder if that provides some of their resilience.
Mm. Yeah, I think that that is true. And I haven't seen any studies around it specifically. I don't know if that's been questioned specifically, but I think that it's true. And I'm just speaking from, you know, my experience, and then the women that I've talked to, they have another life. Actually, one of the things that I saw in my study, almost every woman had another job or they were, or they were pursuing education. So if they got thwarted in their job, like as a firefighter, then they went to school. They, well, or they went to school and then they took another job. There's not a woman that I've talked to that hasn't pursued like something that is outside of the fire department as far as like their education or another job. And we always talk about firefighters always have a second job. But women are, they're doing it for different reasons. Hmm. And it's because they're more appreciated sometimes outside in those settings than they are within the fire service. I brought it up really quick about women. Women are four times more likely to develop PTSD. It, you know, now that I read it, I think it's probably because of the traumas they do experience. And they're more likely to experience traumas that have a, well, like sexual abuse or that sort of thing. So it has an interpersonal component more than car accidents or the course of like the firefighting, although there's stories about all that stuff too.
Well, I just read a study. They did, they looked at empathy.
Yeah.
Around the world and looked at gender differences. And in every country of the world, women were found to be significantly more empathetic than men. Mm-hmm. And I think that on one hand, it's a beautiful quality. And on the other hand, I think it makes women more vulnerable.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
post-traumatic stress.
That's an interesting point. And, you know, to this point, I would say, what do you want women to know about getting help with their mental health? Because there are so many factors. There are factors you see on the job, and mm-hmm. then there's the factors that we're talking about that could be in stations, what you have to do, you know, day to day that you might see. So what do you want women to know about getting help with them?
Well, I would say, like, get help sooner. I would say that to anybody. You know, it's don't wait. It's not, it really isn't a sign that you're being strong if you're ignoring your struggle, your pain. It only gets worse. Anything you stuff down, it comes up a lot stronger. And that's something like men always like to say they compartmentalize or they put things in boxes. You might do that, but it doesn't stay there.
It seems like the strength is in normalizing this.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, yeah. You know, there's a real strength in just, you know, for men and women, just to be able to, you know, go, you know what, I've just seen something, I'm going to go and talk about or
yeah.
you know, something.
Well, yeah, and like sooner than later. I mean, everybody experiences, you know, like we talk about PTSD, so that's the disorder. And you diagnose a disorder when your symptoms interfere in your life. So it affects your work. It affects your home life. So according to the DSM-5, it has to disrupt two areas of your life. So that's basically your personal life and your work life. And it also has a minimum time frame. So it's after 1 month. So after 1 month of experiencing group of symptoms, so it's re-experiencing, it's avoidance of thinking about it, negative cognitions and mood and hyperarousal. If you're experiencing symptoms in those and it lasts more than a month and it's interfering with your life, then it's like you probably would get diagnosed with PTSD. Some of those symptoms are going to be present after exposure to a traumatic stressor. So it's part of our response. It's part of our, you know, that fight flight system. And it's normal. It really is. Everybody who gets exposed to a stressor, and particularly a traumatic stressor, is going to have a stress reaction. So those symptoms, many of them can be present right after, maybe not right after, because sometimes people are like they're going, did I just see that? Like, was that real? I mean, some of the stuff is pretty surreal. So it might take a little bit of time. And as your brain is thinking on it, then it's like, oh, yeah. And you start to experience those symptoms. So you might have nightmares. You might be reliving some aspect of it. You might find you're a little bit more jumpy. So it would be normal to experience those symptoms.
By the way, that is not us putting in a soundtrack of the fire department.
That's real live.
We happen to be at Station 2 Clinic right above the fire department. So
yes. Did any of you feel that?
That's right.
Yeah.
We gave you the soundtrack for a little effect.
There. So it's normal to have a reaction. So that's the post-traumatic stress symptoms, if you want to call it that. I mean, you can just call it your alert system on high. So it's like, just because you experience that doesn't mean you're going to develop PTSD. So, but you have to do something with that. That's why it's like, get help sooner, talk to somebody sooner. It doesn't even have to be me, but you have to talk about it.
I think also experiencing sitting down and speaking with somebody the first time, so that you know, if you come back in later, you kind of know what that experience is going to be, just sitting down and even talking. And that's going to actually make you feel, I think, a little less stressed. I mean, I remember the very first time I sat down and talked with somebody, I was like, I have no idea what's going to happen in this room. And came back a couple of times, and it was really great. It was very, very helpful. And you know, just lowers the level of stress each time you go. Mm-hmm. So, because you just don't have that expectation.
Yeah.
Of like fear.
Yeah. And that's normal to be fearful. I mean, it's like you're talking about something that makes you vulnerable, and it's difficult to show your vulnerability to a stranger.
Yeah. Yeah. And Marcy, I think too, you know, as we've been talking about mental health, working on your mental health is going to affect your physical health.
Absolutely. In fact, while Beth was talking about the symptoms of PTSD, I was thinking about the physical symptoms that can show up and how much easier it is for people to say, hey, my back is hurting worse, or I'm having headaches, or I'm having abdominal pain. After I eat, I feel like crap, or any of a variety of symptoms that are physical that can be manifestations of mental health, emotional health problems. And it's arbitrary to separate, I think, physical and emotional health, because they both influence each other necessarily. Like when we are feeling anxious, we have palpitations, we have night sweats, we have all sorts of symptoms that can show up. But similarly, when we have depression or anxiety or PTSD, we know also that that increases our risk long-term for diabetes and cancer and heart disease, the things that we all, including firefighters, have concerns about. And often people come for their firefighter exam saying, I'm so worried about cancer. And one of the ways that we can address and reduce our risk of cancer is actually by addressing what is happening, not only physically in our diets and exercise and sleep, but also emotionally.
You know, we're coming to the end of our segment here, but I just ask, is there anything that either of you would like to add?
I want to agree with Marcy. And it's also, it's like kind of my approach too. When people come to see me, we talk about the physical also, just as far as like, you know, what, so you're telling me like kind of the emotional symptoms, you know, what are the physical symptoms? And then, when did you last see your doctor? Which they often say, well, I saw Marcy at my AFME. and I'm like, and did you see your primary care doctor? You know, it's like, well, when did you see them? What, you know, like what tests did you get? Because there's a lot of things that can contribute to mental health that can actually be pretty easy to fix. You know, like, you know, low vitamin D. It's a contributor to depression. Got magnesium. Low magnesium can affect your thinking, your sleep, your nervous system. So you can be more anxious if you're low on magnesium, and it can affect your thinking. Like I just found out I was low on magnesium. Mm-hmm. I was in the hospital for something else, but it was like, oh, that's interesting.
Right.
I didn't know that was a thing. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know, you know? Low thyroid, low hormones. I mean, there's a whole host of stuff. Those all can have an impact on your mental health. And I'm sure you know Absolutely. More physical things too, but it goes both ways.
Right.
So
And I would just also add that I feel like even in the 10 years that I have seen Seattle firefighters, that there is a gradual shift toward talking about mental health issues a bit more. And I'm so encouraged by that and hopeful about that. And just last week, I went to the Tacoma Fire documentary called The Calls We Carry. It's beautiful. It's so well, nicely done. And I felt so encouraged that there was a fairly large audience there and that people were asking questions. And at least we're talking about it. I think it's funny how much more easy it is to say, hey, my knee hurts, than I don't feel like I'm a great husband or wife right now, or I'm getting irritable much more than I used to. Like, why is that different? My hope for the future is that people see it as being sort of one and the same. They're both things that are impacting quality of life, and there are things to do to help.
That's a great way to end a very, very hard segment. So I appreciate it, and I appreciate both of you. We are here today from Station 2 Clinic. Thank you again, Dr. Marcy Hamrick, Dr. Beth Murphy. Come see them if you haven't gotten your AFME and if you need some help. And a special thank you. I just want to say it goes out to all our firefighting sisters out there.
Listen Up Bell 27 is brought to you by Seattle Firefighters Healthcare Trust and Local 27. I'm your host, Jen Pennington, and until next time, stay safe and stay healthy.